This is not stupid.
Turn this crap off. This is probably...
Oh, Doug, we're reunited.
This is probably why I don't do this anymore. Oh,
well, this will redeem it.
Best friend, Doug.
I remember in college you guys singing that to me.
That's amazing because this movie came out in 2009.
No, it didn't. I swear.
Yeah, it did. I'm like, I wasn't even in college.
Yeah,
this I remember you singing something.
Jake was in college for a long time, but I don't think he was in college.
I was in college.
You technically
longer.
Were in college at that point. You're right. But no, that song was far after you and I were, or you and I were removed right, from our undergrad right. studies. But yeah, I've sung that song to you a lot.
Sports Jocks coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what?
Doug.
I can't believe it.
Crystal meth tweakers didn't get
and
him.
You
we
know,
found him.
We don't just do this. We don't. Doug just doesn't show up for episode 85, 86, 99.
It's the hundo.
100, folks. Mm-hmm. Count them. We're going to syndication. Gonna catch us at 3 o'clock on a weekday.
Yep, it sounds.
Get the syndication check.
It sounds like a plan. Well, I wore a tie in honor of the 6-6 game, but Doug insisted that I take it off, and it's purple, so he's probably right. I'm colorblind.
Yeah.
I thought it was a shade of blue, but
no, it's definitely purple, which I appreciate. Thank you.
Maybe plums.
You know, I mean,
keep your plums in your pants.
Okay, deal. But yeah, like 6-6. Originally, you were gonna do "Riders in the Storm," which I thought was a perfect song for a tie game. Like, what music do you play for a tie? Reunited.
Reunited, I guess.
And it feels so tie.
Ugh. Where do you even start? Like,
didn't we have a conversation about kissing your sister?
Yeah, that's a tie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tie has game. There ever been a game that has more talking points out of it, or a tie that's had more talking points out of it than this one?
Well, for us, it's easy. We would have had
for
talking
everyone else,
points
it's like,
anyways.
Yeah, you gotta.
Nationally, the reaction was pretty conflicted. Like, it seemed like a lot of people liked it as a throwback to old
school
defensive
games. But I mean,
you had some
crazy moments, like the Bobby Wagner doing the Laura Arrington leap.
I'll call it the Cam Chancellor leap.
Yeah. Cam Chancellor, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
well,
I mean,
gotta go with the original, right?
Well, yeah, but LeVar, he didn't do it to block a kick. He did it to intercept a running
back
off
sack,
the pile.
Sack quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. But I, in a weird way, like I feel like they outplayed us, and the numbers back that up. So it could have been beneficial
agreed.
To get the tie. I mean,
our defense was lucky
to get a tie.
The definition of bend but don't break in that one.
Both teams were at a 90% win percentage at various points in the game, i.e., right before they attempted potential game-winning field goals in overtime. Arizona totaled 443 yards of offense. I didn't realize that they had put up that many yards to only get 6 points. So reinforcing your bend but don't break steal.
Palmer put up 342 passing, which...
We only had 257 yards of offense.
And most of that was in the overtime period.
Yeah, those were really our only good drives. David Johnson for the Cardinals was a workhorse.
I haven't really ever watched him before, but watching him there, he's a... beast.
Yeah.
He was really good.
Playing
He's
against
up there for MVP candidate as
he
far
always,
as Vegas
he
rocks.
Always fell forward. He never got knocked back. And there was the one play I'm thinking of where he got hit and he kind of did a spin move back a yard or two and then went forward another 2 or 3 yards.
It was amazing.
But his workload and usage, 33 carries, 113 yards. We held him to 3.4 a carry.
And 8 catches.
Yeah, 8 catches for 58 yards as well. That's gosh, he's probably, I might not start him next week. I think he's going to be pretty beat up. And from what I heard, our defense still hasn't recovered from setting an NFL record for time spent on the field game.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. And a short, I mean, relatively, I guess you could say somewhat shortened week with the late Sunday and the early Sunday.
Yeah, time of possession in this game, they had it for 46 minutes and 21 seconds, an NFL record. Us, for an overtime game, which obviously as long as you can possibly play when it ends as a tie, we only had it for 28 minutes. Yeah, we were 3 of 14 on third downs. John Ryan punted 9 times. Pretty absurd. They were 10 of 21, so when you look at all the raw data, getting a tie was pretty amazing in that situation. The only guys that really kind of stood out for me, other than the defense as a whole, collectively, which played great, like I think Bobby Wagner had 13 tackles.
And Earl Thomas making several amazing plays.
Mm-hmm.
Kelsey McCray making the game-saving tackle. Yeah. I guess you could say somewhat game-saving at the time.
No, it absolutely was. Yeah. No, somewhat about it.
Pushing like, David, getting the bottom half of David Johnson, too, just enough that he's kind of stepped out before he got the ball.
And then weird that Arians doesn't want to review that. I forget who got pushed out at like the
that's
half.
David Johnson.
It was, yeah. I would have definitely not snapped it so quick. And then why not? You've still got the time. Why not go for it again on third down from the 1-inch line?
Yeah.
And stuff. If you already are saying that you
that's
have no confidence
your offense
in your kicker.
Like you got no trust in them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they lived up to it, especially from the kicking perspective.
But yeah, I mean, in the same way, when they tried their game-winning field goal, the Seahawks, I think it was second down, right? They had two shots.
Yeah.
Two shots.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do it.
But I mean, like, for ours, well, I didn't realize the history that Hauschka had at Arizona Stadium. Apparently, he struggled dramatically there.
And every part of that field goal up until the kick looked great. So I don't, that's got to be.
Yeah, hold snap was perfect.
Yeah, that was solely on him. What is he, like 9 for 17 or 11 for 17?
Is it that bad?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Is that at that stadium?
At that stadium.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then even the one that he made, I don't know if you guys noticed, he took out a huge divot before he hit it, which is weird for kickers to do. I guess, like, on a positive note, congratulations to Russell Wilson having his first baby, and not a surprise.
He hasn't
because,
had it.
There's, well, oh, yeah, yeah. For announcing announcing that his first child is impending. And not a surprise to any Seahawks fans because he's had no protection all year. High five.
You come up with that one yourself.
I was sitting on that one. I heard it. Katie Nolan, works cited page.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yep, I was sitting on that one on the drive-in.
Yeah, talk about that offensive line. When Sal got hurt, were you guys almost relieved? I mean, you don't want to rejoice somebody's injury.
I figured the guy behind him's worse.
But boy,
yeah,
was he bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was bad before that happened. I mean, there was plenty of, you know, what, first and 20s, first and 30s, the whole game. And
they were holding all the time.
And their scoring drive, their one scoring drive was with the backup, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Who was the backup at left tackle?
Font, whatever, the
he's a rookie?
Basketball player. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, he's got good feet, I'm sure. Yeah, he played basketball.
Left tackle?
Yeah, but he barely played in college, let alone.
Yeah, it's getting pretty brutal.
And yet, only one sack. He only gave up one sack.
Oh, Russ was getting rid of the ball quick. And
does it show hurries and hits and
no,
all that?
No, but I'm sure, yeah, he was hurried a lot. But, I mean, Palmer was sacked 4 times.
And then the penalties just came at horrible times, too. And I'm sure that we needed the penalties to get the plays that we got.
Penalties and yards for penalties over there?
Oh, I'd have to look that up here.
Oh, I thought it would be there.
I saw it at one point. It was an excessive difference. Because it seemed like the few times that we actually got off and got good plays, they always came back on penalties.
Even an interception came back due to a penalty.
And then the other thing, and knock on wood for this, I mentioned it last week in the pod too, we seem to have uncanny luck at recovering our own fumbles. Russ had 2 fumbles, we recovered both. Like, these are really going to burn us soon because the law of averages say that, you know, we're not going to recover these every single time like we have been.
Yeah, Glowinski showing, I mean, some nimbleness there.
That was a huge recovery on his part, too.
On that one. Yeah, some awareness, too.
And then
10 penalties for 90 yards. It actually seemed like a lot worse
to
me.
Yeah, it seemed worse.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, the one that was the unsung hero play was stopping them on 4th down, I believe, like, in the 3rd quarter for what would have been a field goal lead that would have been insurmountable for us the way our offense was going. Yeah, it was just tough one to figure, but in the greater scheme of things, I think it really hurts Arizona, big picture, a lot more than it hurts us having the tie on there. We're 4-1-1, they're 3-3-1. Like, that's a pretty solid lead over the second place team in your division.
It is.
Especially in a game where they've got to be kicking themselves because they had a lot more opportunities to win it than we did.
And, I mean, it kind of points to the fact that they have to come here and win.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, I'm confident with that.
The only Seahawks on offense that I saw some positives from, Doug Baldwin had 6 catches for 69 yards, and if he could have just shook one guy, he takes the field goal out of consideration at the end. And then Jimmy Graham again with a solid 5 for 53.
You know, they didn't seem to throw his way, though, that much at all until the overtime.
I should have checked his targets, Doug, if you want to look that up.
He had 5 catches, and I want to say 4 of those were in overtime, but that's just from memory.
Yeah, well, your memory is usually pretty good. John Ryan did a good job with those 9 punts,
Graham
though.
Had 10 targets, so he was targeted 10 times, so wow.
Yeah, so he's only converting on half of his targets. But John Ryan was at 9 punts, averaged 46 yards a punt. Sad, though, when your punter accounts for 414 yards, about double the total of your offense.
And there were a couple of the John Ryan punts that we were used to, where the camera, you know, kind of stops where it's supposed to and then just keeps going to the left.
And he keeps sailing. Anything else you guys want to throw about that weird, weird game?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's been some talk afterwards of Bruce Arians complaining about the Wagner jumping and Sherman and Carroll saying, no, it's not illegal. And Arians coming back, of course, saying, it's in the past. I don't care anymore.
Oh, that's usually when you just don't want to admit that you're wrong.
He's a big whiner. And it's been even the head of officiating, what is it, Dean Blandino, says
it was
a legal play. You know, everything was fine. Had he used the center as a catapult, obviously that would, if you would have landed on him, that would have been a penalty.
But grazing him as you clear
him. And we've seen
him.
This enough times. I mean, Paul Malu did it a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, Cam Chancellor.
And if you've got a big problem with it, switch the cadence on your snap.
Yeah, and that's what Sherman said. They have the most predictable cadence in the league.
Obviously they do. Like, if we could do that to him 2 times.
Yes.
Like, it's, you can always, the old George W. Bush quote, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, we can't get fooled again. You know, like,
do it in your W voice.
Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice. Oh, heck, we just can't get fooled again.
Thanks for stopping by, W.
Yep, no problem. Hey, he was on the first episode. But on to next week. We've got the 2-4 New Orleans Saints in New Orleans. This is a game where I feel like if our offense can't get it right against them, there's some pretty serious problems going forward.
And my biggest concern, and I think Brandon kind of alluded to it, well, he mentioned one of them being, you know, slightly shortened week, late Sunday, early Sunday the next week. Also, think back to, and we didn't mention for this one in Arizona, the weather was in the 90s. At what, like, the game started at 5:30 or whatever, maybe 6:30 their time or something, and the weather, I mean, and Sherm said that was a big effect. And think back to the playoffs last year, an extreme to the other way in Minnesota. But think of the following week, how it took them a half to even kind of get back into things against Carolina. And so I'm thinking it could be similar. And offensively, we can't afford that.
Well, the offense will be well-rested because they weren't on the field much.
Good point.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of heat, correct me if I'm wrong, at the L.A. game as well earlier this year.
Yeah, and that one didn't go so hot for us either. So. Hot. Right. Yep. But New Orleans has given up 403 yards per game, 287 passing, 116 rushing. They're also giving up an average of 32.5 points per game. So if we're not scoring 28... we're already proving that we're a below-average offense in the NFL.
And you think we can do it? Obviously, we're going to have to switch up our game plan, because I'm sure you guys have heard, you know, with Russell Wilson getting having a third injury in 7 games.
And he keeps saying that he feels better.
Well, these last 2 practices is the first time in his history he's been limited in practice.
Yeah.
Did you hear how he hurt his pec?
Making a baby?
Maybe going half on a baby. No, I think he was practicing his Terry Crews for his Halloween costume.
Oh, peck pop, yeah. You've been sitting on that one, too.
A little bit. I actually came up with that myself.
That's good.
So looking over the Saints depth chart, Daryl Tapp.
Oh, I remember him.
33-year-old Daryl Tapp is on their depth chart. So, yeah. And Roman Harper, who is probably not much younger.
He's probably older than us.
So, I mean,
we got Steve Smith.
Looking at our defense, besides Cameron Jordan, Jarius Bird, maybe still. Like, there's not a lot.
Jarius Bird's a talented guy.
Yeah, but that's what it is. Besides Cameron Jordan,
he is far overpaid. He's like $9 million.
He makes Earl money.
There's definitely not a lot of big names that people would recognize for sure. But I mean, they've been in shootouts pretty much all year, right?
But they know that what they can have to do, they just have to sit on the
the run, because we need to run the ball more to protect what's his face, Russell Wilson,
baby maker.
Big Russ.
But and like I'm sure you heard that they dropped CJ Spiller today, yesterday. And
oh, that's kind of a bummer.
Saints but, also dropped him earlier in the year, so
yeah. But they brought on Will Tokiofu, the fullback,
good to see him back.
Kind of. So the idea, I'm thinking, right, is that they're going to try to run the ball a little bit more, which they need to do, so that Russ doesn't get hit more or as much or whatever.
And oddly enough, Christian Michael was still relatively effective in that game. Had like 53 yards, I think a decent.
Have you guys talked about your frustration? Sorry to divert about your frustration with Christian Michael though. Like he like bugs the crap out of me.
Him.
So I've liked him, but like over the last few games, I'm noticing like he needs a yard or two, and he'll like try to do a little shifty thing, and I'm like, from the TV view, it looks like you have it. If you just go straight out of bounds, like you could do that, but he wants to cut back.
So you're getting like Ricky Waters vibes.
Maybe
off of
I guess.
Remember, Ricky Waters would do that all the time.
It frustrates me. I feel like he can get that one or two yards if he just keeps running towards the sideline, but he cuts back in towards a person.
Yeah.
Like he's a beast mode, but he just falls to the ground. He doesn't try to like bowl him over.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's really.
He's got a nice spin move though.
He does.
And you know who has a nice spin move? Robert Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We will be getting to that shortly. Don't worry about that. That was pretty amazing, and that will be fun. But yeah, against the Saints, are you guys worried at all about playing over there? I mean, that's kind of like Seattle.
Yes.
It's a very, very intense atmosphere.
I'm not confident in the offense. They're gonna put up points. I feel like they're gonna.
Are they though?
They have like three great, like not great. It's way too early receivers because they're all under 24. But they're
Brandon Cooks, Michael Thomas, and I got the guy on one of my
Sneed.
I got him on one of my fantasy teams.
The fourth. Sneed the fourth.
Yeah, okay. Don't forget that.
Yeah, the other three.
And then Breeze throw into him, and then don't they got your. They got Fleener at tight end. Mm-hmm. Actually, he's hurt, isn't he?
I'm not sure.
But Ingram, who's had a pretty productive year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to put up points.
And Ingram catches the ball well out of the backfield.
But, like, Atlanta, best offense in the NFL. They play us. They put up 24, I believe.
21 in the third.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. That seemed like a lot of blown assignments. But, anywho, best offense in the league can only put up 24 against us. Saints, one-dimensional offense. I mean, Ingram's been okay, but Drew Brees is on pace to throw for like half of 5,500 yards, which would break the NFL record by like 200 yards.
I'm going back to the tale of two halves that I alluded to before from the previous week and having an effect.
I think it will on the defense. But I don't know. I would think it might have more of an impact on the big guys. Like, I think the secondary guys will probably recover. I will say one thing that I'm concerned about is Brandon Cooks. What are the two things that the Legion of Boom's usually vulnerable to?
He's not a tight end.
That's one.
And speedy receivers.
He is that.
Get behind the defense.
Speedy receivers. We don't have many guys that run like 4.29s like Brandon Cooks does. DeSean Jackson chopped us up a few times. Tavon Austin's chopped us up a few times.
Earl's got the closest thing they got.
Yeah, and he can't be everywhere. So, so I am kind of worried about. And Brandon Cooks has had like he had like a 98-yard touchdown this year. He's had a few really explosive plays. I would be on the lookout for him. You remember him well from Oregon State carving us up a few times. Like Brandon Cooks is kind of a monster.
Who is his receiving partner? The other on the other side. Wheaton, right? Or Wheaton over at Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Wheaton was his other. That was a killer receiving core to deal with.
Yeah.
And especially at a time where the Cougars hadn't rebuilt their defense yet.
It's reminiscent of Hushman Zada and
Ocho.
Ocho.
Okay, so I guess we'll get into predictions.
Well,
Doug, since you've been up,
got
to go to the person that's been off for a little while.
I think it's going to be close, probably like 24-21.
I'm going to go 27-17, but I'm going to throw something else in there. I'm going to go Jimmy Graham, 2 touchdowns against his former team. This is the return of Jimmy to New Orleans.
I like that.
And, of course, Max Unger on the O-line there. That's down there.
So. Yeah. So you're calling a lot of pancakes on the other side?
Well, no. I mean, he's not coming here, so I'm just saying Jimmy Graham goes off and is...
I think he'll have 10 catches, 8 or 10 catches.
Yeah, they're gonna go out of their way to make him a part of the game plan. And they should every week. Like... Russell Wilson, every time he drops back, his first read should probably be Jimmy Graham, and then Doug Baldwin a close second.
Just because, I mean, Russell's proven that he can throw it to an area that's just undefendable.
Mm-hmm. and Jimmy Graham can definitely catch it in that area. I'm gonna go optimistic on this one. I'm gonna say 31-21. I'm gonna say we get right about league average for points against New Orleans. I want to see us be league average on offense and then build from there if we can. Maybe get on a run like we did after the Hawaii trip for Russell last year where we were dropping like 35 on everyone.
Yeah, we need to get back there for sure.
Hawaii trip?
With Sierra. It was on there bye week. Oh, it was Mexico. Thank you. You're right. My apologies.
I mean, I don't even know, though, with him throwing the ball. Like, what? I mean, he's limited in practice first time, but, like, I wonder how the pec affects the throwing and how that's going to feel and
well,
hurt.
Well, I remember Tavares Jackson a few years ago when he was the starter had, like, a pec injury all year, and he was still throwing pretty effectively, but different people.
Yeah.
You know, it affects them different ways for sure. Mm-hmm. I remember John Elway had one back in the day. Brett Favre had one. I'm sure probably every quarterback's had it at some point.
Do you guys, here's a your last thought on this. Did you, you already gave your guess?
I did.
Score.
You both think by a 10-point margin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which but is a competitive close game.
I have a thought. Do you think that even with Russell at 100%, they wouldn't be using the run option anymore?
They'd be using it.
They would use it. Yeah. They tried in this last game, and he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
They tried at least two or three times.
Although
the
safety looked like he had it read on that play.
Well, then
there was one other one
where
he couldn't do it.
The air was in
his
head.
But whether it's to save Russ or whether it's because teams are spying it, I wonder how much it would really be used if he was 100%.
I think they would still be able to use it.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you've got Russ at 100%. Like, I've seen Russ, like even when the play, like, when someone has it read, I see him beat his guy a lot when he's healthy. And he's still young. Like, this is just truly an injury thing. It's not like an old man thing. So, and even, yeah, I mean, I guess the element of surprise, I even saw Kirk Cousins pick up, like, 25 yards on a read option this past weekend.
But, I mean, another factor is it's Michael. It's not the guy that he was running that option with.
Marshawn would definitely draw more attention, for sure. But, yeah, I think it would still be relatively effective because, I mean, Russ rushed for, like, 2 years ago, he rushed for, like, 850 yards. This year, I think he's got, like, 27 through six games. Mm-hmm. I feel like I could run for 27 yards in six games.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be dead afterwards.
I agree. I think I can.
But Russ is pretty dead right now, too.
He is. Three injuries in, what, seven games?
Mm-hmm.
That's horrible.
All right. Well, since it's two out of three, we'll start with the Cougars first on this one. Wazoo with a, I'm going to call it an interesting 37-32 win just because ASU, like, that's stupid Sparky. I heard about that enough times for 10 lifetimes.
Which is the just their version of the Wildcat.
Yeah, I had to ask Doug to make sure because to my eyes it looked like the Wildcat.
Who's their in-state rival?
Arizona.
Arizona.
Wildcats.
Yeah. And they don't want to run a play called the Wildcats. That's my
and don't forget the third rival in that state, Northern Arizona.
Go there Jacks. You go. Lumberjacks. Yeah, you got to give them the shout out.
Well, I'm a Lum, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You got the proper look for a Lumberjack.
That's true.
But yeah, 5-2 record now, 37-32 win. Luke Falk, much like Russell Wilson, got beat up, except for I think the stats are going to reflect it more in Falk's case than in Wilson's, because Falk seemed like he got knocked down every time he threw a pass that game.
He got hit a lot. He was sacked seven times, but he was a couple yards shy of 400 and three touchdowns and no interceptions.
Yeah. No, so. He played. He played absolutely great, and you referenced it earlier, the Robert Taylor kick return, adding a new element to Wazoo that's been missing since Doug first started going to school over there when The Hangover came out.
Do you remember the last person to do
that? It was Sammy Moore, right? 2003.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, long break on that. And at a pivotal time, because our offense hadn't figured out Arizona State's defense at that time, were they up like 9-3 or something?
Something like that.
Give or take?
Yeah.
So the 100-yard kickoff return gives us the lead. And I was already satisfied with it because he had gained about like 35 or 40. And he had two defenders right next to the sideline. So you're kind of thinking like he's running out of field. I mean, we've all seen it a million times on very good returns that the returner runs out of field. Somehow, and I don't know how he pulled this off, and they showed six replays, and he didn't step out of bounds at all. He managed to turn the corner when there was no corner to turn, and then managed to finish off the rest of the 50 yards relatively easily after that. But I just thought that was a hugely, hugely pivotal play in a close game.
It was a fun one to watch. It was a game where they definitely had, in the fourth quarter, it seemed like they were coming back, and
they it was like grit kind of thing. Like they just had to come together, had a big special teams play or two, and then on defense and offense just to close it out. So it was a good win.
And I think Arizona State kind of surprised us with all that Wildcat action, because who's going to prepare for the Wildcat nowadays, you know, like in college football? Nobody runs the Wildcat. Like, well, since, I mean, like, the Dolphins with Ronnie Brown. That was the last time I saw it regularly.
Do recognize, so they started the game with their starting quarterback, I do believe, and then they scored on the opening drive.
Where he had that right sweet down
the
hurdle. Field.
Yeah, and he hurdled Pippins, a corner, mm-hmm. and to go into for a touchdown. And then I think he was in the next series, and then he was out. And then they were on to their third-string quarterback, who was a true freshman from Houston. And that's why
he was the guy with three names, right?
Well, two last names.
But I mean, they'd call him like, you
like kind of like you, three first names.
Yeah. Okay, but I don't go by that all the time. I was talking to my dad about it, and I just brought up, and I didn't get this from anyone. This was original. Like, it seems like people with three names that go by three names are generally serial killers or presidential murderers. Like, that's the only way you ever hear, like, people with three names. So, like, I felt bad for that kid because I'm sure he's perfectly nice. But, like, yeah, it's usually Lee Harvey Oswald, John Wilkes Booth, John Wayne Gacy, you know, like, on and on and on.
Dylan Sterling Cole.
So that'll be the next guy.
That's him. So
watch out, Hillary.
So, yeah, it was a good game. Oh, just as far, one interesting thing, and I'm sure we didn't even watch the game together, but I thought maybe you thought the same thing. I was a little surprised we didn't rush as much. We didn't run the ball as much. We only had a total of 7 carries between our three running backs.
Yeah.
And
especially with how good the running game had been going in previous weeks.
Yeah. So that kind of surprised me.
And then what was our grand total with, like, Falk kind of running backwards for knees? Do we end up with, like, negative 60 rushing yards for the game?
Get this, Brandon. We counting the quarterback, which counts, you know, the sacks and things like that, we ended up with a negative 52 for the game. Ooh. But I will also say the last three plays of the game, they did one of those to run the clock out. Like, he ran back, like, 22 yards to run the clock and then kneed. And then he had two more of about, like, what, 5 to 7 yards.
Why didn't he just take a knee?
There was more time that you needed to run off. It wasn't just a consistent. 40
seconds between. They were out of timeouts. That more than the,
It was good strategic clock management at the end of the game. Strategery. Like, at the end, which Mike Leach has not always been known for. Like, I actually love the clock management at the end of the game, especially when your running game had been non-existent. And then Todd Graham, not a fan of the clock management at the end of the game.
That's not why he said what he said. But another little historic note that happened because of what happened within the game is just that Gabe Marks and River Craycraft became the first two active receivers at the same time to have 200-plus receptions.
And is that for any school?
I just know for Pac-12.
Yeah, I knew it was Pac-12.
I don't know what it is for others, but it's probably up there.
Oh, and Marks.
How did they do on Kalen Barrage?
He was the running back taking direct snaps.
Number one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had a long touchdown run.
Yeah, he had some highlight reel plays earlier in the season.
I think that was just what caught us off guard was, you know, like, he ended up taking the majority of the snaps in the fourth quarter.
In the Sparky. I mean, he had 12 carries for 82 yards.
And one of them got almost all of it.
One of them was 52 yards. So you take that one away, you know.
Which you never can.
Yeah, you can't. Which is like, what, 30 yards on 11 carries. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, the guy is a threat all over the field. So, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have healthy quarterbacks, just put the ball in the hand of your best athlete and hope good things happen. So I actually give Arizona State a lot of credit for making it as close as they did with having a limited roster at the time. But I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout-out to Gabe Marks for a very, very cool 53-yard touchdown, which I don't think I'd seen this happen before. Like, he catches it. Great pass by Luke Falk, too. Like, 40 of it was in the air. But right when he caught it, a defender's on him, and he stiff-armed him 10 yards.
15.
Oh, it was 15?
It was probably about 15.
15 yards of consistent stiff-arming and running, engaged and connected, to score a touchdown.
Wow.
It was a pretty cool play. So, like, the Cougars' touchdowns were really exciting in that game. They're always pretty
exciting.
And
where is he at, do you think, on school record books for, like,
oh, he's
top of everything.
Yeah, he's the top dog. Which, ironically enough, we didn't put him in the Mount Rushmore of Wazoo wideouts last year when we did it. We said, like, pending what he does in the rest of his career. So we were giving the option of putting him on. But now I think
that's... Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure we didn't get him on.
We need to listen back to that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like your dad and I might have been on that.
Who did Maybe. I know for sure. I know for sure we got Brandon Gibson. We got Philip Bobo.
Dom Williams. Did we put him there?
Possibly. Mel Hine, my dad told me, because he remembered that. Like,
he
pushed for the old guy.
I don't know if he got him in.
And then there was like...
I don't know.
There's one other one that I know we put in, but I don't know for sure if we put Gabe Marks in or not, which we definitely would if we reassessed the list.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so next week the Cougars got Oregon State. That's an away game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep, on ESPN2 at night. So happy that it's ESPN2.
And
happy that it's at night,
it.
Too.
Hate it.
It really caters to me.
It's so ridiculous.
It's my middle of the day.
That's Jake. That's like before Jake goes to work usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm at my prime watching moments.
That's like our like 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, for most people, they really got to gut that one out. And it might even be an advantage to the Cougars because we're so used to playing at that time. Like, I think that's kind of helping us out somewhat. But yeah, very happy with the 5-2 record at the moment. One more win to be bowl eligible.
Of course, 3-0? No, wait.
4-0 Pac-12. Yep. So now we can get over to your little chump
just,
change.
Well,
before
you
we
know
get,
what?
Before we get there real quick and you go on to that, can I just talk about a game like the Colorado-Stanford game? Just the score of being 10-5.
I saw that. I had to write it in a double
take.
Yeah, I did too. I was just looking at Pac-12 scores.
Baseball. It's not baseball season yet. What's going on?
That's definitely a baseball score. So anyways.
What the heck happened to Stanford?
Their O-line is not what it used
to be. Their O-line is terrible, and McCaffrey's running for his life every week.
Mm-hmm.
So is everyone's
took
loading
him out of
the
Heisman.
Box.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they had three offensive linemen they had to replace, and one of them was like an All-American.
Yeah. But they usually replace them just fine.
Yeah, not this year.
Yeah.
And no, you know, Kevin Hogan, who's now starting quarterback for the Browns.
And rushed for like 100 yards.
Yeah.
I think probably threw for 30.
Well, like, yeah, just the Pac-12 is like upside down, having Stanford and Oregon be towards the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy. I'm happy for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm. It's great to see. It's something we can agree on.
So that overrated team.
The number 4 Washington Huskies.
Overrated.
7-0? How can you say it? With that
amazing.
They haven't
played anybody.
Yeah. They could easily be 0-7. Those are all close games.
Yeah. That Oregon 70-21, that was close.
A lot closer than the score would indicate.
Yeah, so this one, actually 41-17, I would say was not as close as the score would indicate. It was 31-3, 21-0, like just like 7 minutes into the second quarter.
Give Oregon State 5 more minutes, they would have won.
Yeah, against I think they would have put the first string defense back out there. That's most of their points were scored against the
It's kind of fun being Skip Bayless.
But, you know, Browning actually, you know what? 291 yards, 3 touchdowns, ran for 1. 89.9 quarterback rating, which is probably, I would say, his worst this year, which is kind of incredible.
Have you looked at any of the Heisman lists? I mean, I know he's on them.
I heard that he's like number 2.
Really?
So 26 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and 4 rushing touchdowns. So 30 touchdowns.
So who would be ahead of him right now? Lamar Jackson, probably?
Yeah, Jackson. And he's going to run away with it, too.
Yeah, I think so, too.
But even, I mean, if Browning ends this year and he's at number 2, that's still by far the highest Heisman candidate that the Huskies have ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And by very far the highest offensive Heisman candidate.
Napoleon Kaufman was probably like 10th. That's probably
not
like
even
your second closest.
But yeah, I mean, Ettman was the last highest.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just kind of, it's kind of crazy to see them roll off these dominating wins this way. Like, it's been a long time. And, I mean, this week is a nice test against the former Washington Husky, Trent Williams, the quarterback over in Utah.
Oh, geez, I forgot they were playing Utah. That should be a pretty awesome game,
actually.
Against
number 17 team in the nation. You know, Joe Williams, their Utah running back, retired a few weeks ago.
And then came back.
And then came out of retirement, put up 330-something yards on UCLA.
That's got to be one of the best comebacks of all time.
So, I mean, this is ripe for a lot of stories, and and if you go Hollywood ending, it doesn't go in the Huskies' favor, because, you know, either one Williams playing against this former team, you know, sticking it to the coach that didn't give him a chance, or you got the other Williams coming out of retirement and, you know, rolling off a bunch. But I just don't see it in Utah.
Did Utah get – Utah beat you guys last year, right?
Yeah. 34-23 here, so –
And as I recall, Doug, we beat Utah last year, correct?
We didn't play Utah.
Well, we beat them.
But great nickname, RPM, just rolling it out again. Ross Pettit, McClatcher, well, not McClatcher, of course he's out injured, but Ross and Pettit, Pettis getting in there for two touchdowns. Ross rolling off four catches, 115 yards. Probably one of the fastest guys in the Pac-12, yeah. Hard to cover.
Yep.
Miles Gaskin getting 128 on the ground.
He seems like he's coming on a lot after a slow start.
Like, didn't play great against those three really bad, you know, teams that we played prior to the Pac-12 play. So kind of good to see him get into it a little bit here. But the defense is just playing insane right now.
Yeah.
Azeem Victor, you got Buda Baker, you got just across the board.
Poo-poo pants, just shutting it down.
Like, as much as, and this, is, I guess, is going on tape, but, like, as much as I don't like them, I mean, yeah, their whole team, they have on both sides of the ball, like, three or four mid-season All-Americans, you know, or All-Americans, or at least, for sure, all Pac-12.
Which is typical, you know, of a top
and
five
from
team.
And from what scouts are saying, there might be more first-round picks than there was a few years ago when it was Shaq Thompson and...
Shaq Thompson wasn't a first rounder.
He wasn't?
Mm-mm.
Okay, second. First two rounds.
Good try.
You they can't had, will him into the first round.
I can't remember pronounce his name. The linebacker.
He must have not been. No, I mean, as much as I want to just go for Utah, and that obviously I'm rooting for Utah, they haven't been overly impressive. I mean, they only have one loss, I believe, on the year. But, I mean, some of their games, they haven't dominated the way UW has. Like, their first game of the year, they only won 24-0 to over Southern Utah. To BYU, they won by one.
BYU's not a bad team, though.
Yeah, but they're about 500 right now.
But they played Boise State really tough last week.
Yeah, but if you actually looked at the... You probably only looked
just
at, the,
looked
score.
At the score.
Yeah, but if you would have looked at BYU's offense, they scored one touchdown. Their other two touchdowns were defensive pick sixes to Boise State. The other couple other games, you know, they San Jose State, 34-17. USC was close. Their one loss.
That was before USC got things together too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they actually beat Arizona. Utah beat Arizona by more than Utah.
You said Cal was the team that beat them this year?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, and then the last game against Oregon State. They 19-14 Utah won. It's like, and then against UCLA, they won 52-45. So, but that's the game where that running back that you were referring to came had his.
But to give UCLA, whose offense has been struggling this year, 45.
Well, they don't have Josh Rosen for that game.
Yeah,
Josh Rosen has nerve damage in his throwing arm.
Really?
So he's not playing.
Well, it looked like you remember seeing him warm up against the. Well, you might not have because you were at the game. But, like, he looked horrible warming up. Like, it looked really, really painful to throw.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's numbness or pain or he's got some sort of.
It looks bad. Like, he can't extend his arm or get any velocity.
Their quarterback, I mean, he did some stuff against us, the UCLA quarterback.
Well, he's like, a fifth-year senior, too.
Fifth-year senior, he was a walk-on. But he had 464 yards against Utah, five touchdowns, also had four interceptions.
So he carved up Utah a lot more than he did Wazoo.
Definitely.
And Browning is playing like we've referred.
Oh, geez. So when Doug mentioned all those facts, like, this game looks better on paper than it may be in execution.
So we'll see. I don't see...
It's a game day
41-17, 70-21, but then again, I didn't see 70-21 for the Oregon one either. But
yeah, well, especially after losing to him 12 times in a row.
Exactly. So it might be a little tighter than the Husky fans are getting used to now. So, but you know what? Return to glory so far, so.
But just since I'm here, and I'm, who knows when I'll ever come around here again, but just other games for UW that they have coming. I think this game will be a tight one. Utah.
And Cal.
Oops, yeah. I switched you in.
Cal, right?
Yeah, and then Cal. I mean, Cal can put up points. They're just like us. I'm worried about them for WSU.
Me too. Well, we'll be there. So.
Webb is playing great. He'd be the talk of the Pac-12 if not for Browning.
Well, Webb coming from Montana State, you know, his whole purpose of going there was just to have this be his audition for the NFL, essentially.
Kind of like Vernon Adams, but it didn't work for Vernon Adams.
It didn't.
Well, you could pick a worse offensive system to go try that in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Got a number one pick out of it. That's not even played a game.
But that's so weird. Well, we've been talking about a lot of stuff that's like in the moment and actually happening, and since it's episode 100, we got to reflect. And what better place to do that than pop culture, which has always kind of been one of our harder ones to find as good a content, because the sports stuff just takes care of itself. But pop culture, with that being said, since 2013, we've had some really good pop culture segments. I did some research off of our website, which is the first time I've done. Yeah, it's the first time I've done research off of our website, but a lot of lot of good stuff. Yeah, I do research all the time. I've just never really cite us. But like, I wrote down some real fun ones, and I didn't listen back to them, but it jogged memories from, you know, like doing these. The first one that I just have to start with, and we're not doing a Mount Rushmore, but for me this would be the low hanging fruit, was like the Shark Week segment.
That's the one I thought of too, and I mean, I guess that's not really good for me because I wasn't on it.
But like, yeah, I remember
I listened to it and it was amazing.
Yeah, it was. That's one of my favorite segments that we did. And it just so happened that like Doug and I did a great job of watching the Discovery Channel, and they provided a lot of interesting content. And it was just one of those ones where you're just on, you know, like we were going back and forth, playing off of each other really well. Like the comedy hit, which it doesn't always. And stuff, like, it ended up being a good segment. So if you ever want to go back into the archives and dig that one up, like, that's a worthy listen.
Do we just have the date for that?
Well, you can see it. Like, you just have to drag far down on our website. But, yeah, a couple of years ago. 90210 characters Mount Rushmore. That was a pretty fun one to do.
Again, wasn't on it.
Oh, you weren't on that one? I thought you were.
No, I don't think I was.
Okay, well, you would remember if you were. No problem. I'm literally writing them down from just ones that I really liked.
What about the episode where I had Seven Hodges?
That doesn't count for pop culture, but that was pretty classic.
Paranormal Activity, and I believe I wasn't on that one. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it. Give me a complex over here.
We're going to get to some ones that
I do like that when we've gone over people's careers, I really like that.
So, yeah.
Talked about Madonna. What we talked about.
The De Niro one was pretty good.
Beyonce.
You were on
that
one
recently. Yeah, De Niro's career.
Another one of my favorite that I know we were all on was the 2015 Back to the Future show, where it was just crazy to think when we watched that movie as kids that we were actually at 2015 when it happened, and then just comparing all the interesting things in the movie to what they got right, what we're still waiting for, what happened, how we would do the Biff going back in time, voting or making the sports almanac in our pocket and making all the picks. Like,
here's one for you, Brandon, that you were on. It wasn't a pop culture segment, but one of the most memorable pods, you know, was the one that we did here at Children's right before we went to the
parade.
The parade.
Oh, yeah.
The Super Bowl parade.
That was a great pod.
That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what we talked about, but I just remember.
It was
what
just
we were
so
about to
fun.
Do.
Like, by far the happiest. The happiest one.
And it was the best part of, I mean, besides the ceremony, which was awesome, but Jake really suffered that day.
That was tough. Yeah. It was cold.
He dressed for, like, Hawaii and summer.
And I had slept for an early death. Die Hard being a Christmas movie or not, I think all three of us were on for that one. That was a fun debate. I definitely came on the side of it is a Christmas movie. I remember Doug was very anti-Die Hard as a Christmas movie.
And I love Die Hard.
Yeah, I know. Everybody loves Die Hard.
I'm a big fan of those.
It's a great movie.
But I don't think it's a Christmas movie.
One I think I wish we would come, you know, bring back and we missed with 1995 was Mount Rushmore Songs of 1994.
Yeah.
Love that one.
Yep, that was really good. 94, great year for music. Mount Rushmore of SNL hosts. I think all three of us were on for that one. That was a lot of fun to do. There's been some really awesome sketches and great hosts.
We also
hosts.
Did an SNL 40 and done a lot of SNL.
yeah, they've helped our content.
I think all the Apple Cup ones were good. Minus the outcomes after the game.
Well, again, not pop culture.
Yeah, that was like the...
I'm just talking about great
online online poker that my dad just broke down and stuff. Like, and then... he had one that was really interesting too, so interesting that I forgot it. But
well, I think his Hodges are like the most researched of all.
Oh, by far.
He has
by
good
far.
Hodges.
Yeah.
What about bands or musicians you wish would just stop?
That was good too. And I believe all three of us were on that one.
Really?
OJ 20-year anniversary. We kind of foresaw, because we did that in like 2014. So we kind of foresaw the big 2016 run that would come on America re-embracing the OJ saga that produced like probably some of the best content entertainment-wise in the year over the ESPN 30 for 30 5-episode event. And then the great FX miniseries. Yeah.
American Crime Story.
So, yeah, we were on top of that before the rest of the world had really embraced the 20-year anniversary. Another one, and I think this was, all of us were on it, but I think Doug and I were the ones that really riffed on this specific thing. And riffed, not beefing, but riffed, like, vibed off of each other. We called the Caitlyn Jenner thing, like, 2 years before it happened. Like, in a roundabout way, as we were talking about like the Kardashians, that was one that Doug brought up for a hodgepodge. We just mentioned that the only person in the family that truly has accomplished something was at the time Bruce Jenner, and that he's just this neutered, impotent guy on the couch who, you know, like I think my quote was, Kris Jenner keeps his balls in her purse, and a couple of years later, he's trying to lose those and he has a different name.
Wow.
I know, again, this is supposed to be pop culture, but and I'm just looking at you with Mount Rushmore of Michael Jackson songs. That's pretty awesome.
I have that written down.
That counts, yeah.
Yeah, no, that was a really fun one to do because sometimes with Mount Rushmores it gets difficult because...
Was I at that one?
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
But, like, it gets difficult because, you know, usually you have... Sometimes you have, like, four obvious things. Like, if you did Mount Rushmores or Seahawks, you already have three of them established right away because we just have three Hall of Famers. And then you kind of argue for the fourth spot. With the Michael Jackson songs, like, you could legitimately put, like, 15 of them in the top four. And I think that makes for the best Mount Rushmore segments. This one, a shout-out to Doug. Dennis Rodman going to North Korea was a fun segment to do.
Yeah, that's one of your few ones you brought in.
He's a stud.
Yep. Well, and then that movie, so we talk about that, and... Lo and behold, two other people found it very, very interesting, Seth Rogen and James Franco, and they made a movie that I thought was hilarious, and I guarantee you that movie does not get made if Dennis Rodman doesn't go to North Korea.
Yeah, it made total sense.
So that was like, we're ahead of the curve a lot. Brandon, this was a you and me specific
right.
one that I remember that I really enjoyed. When we broke down Drunk History
stuff,
when that show first came out... We had it earmarked as a successful show before it ever even debuted. You had a bunch of good backstory information on the genesis of that show. We brought up some scenarios of things that we would do if, you know, like we could do Drunk History. And we never got to it, but one of these days we should get together and just like, maybe not film, but do our own episodes when we're under the influence and just find a safe spot to sleep where we don't have to drive and stuff. Like that could be fun. And then the last one that I had, and this one hurt me because I lost. You were not at this podcast, but one of our Mount Rushmore of guests, Aaron Crockett, was taking your place. And it was the Who Ruined Who, or Did Bobby Ruin Whitney?
Oh, and you lost that one.
I feel like I won it if there was a jury, but the jury was two of my peers, and I lost it with them. I felt like I had a great case. I did the most research. I came with the most information, but I feel like the results were predetermined before I even started.
Breaking news, the Sounders have scored 3 minutes ago.
Nice.
Yay!
Go Sounders.
It's a playoff game.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, pop culture, not always our easiest segments to do, but when you look back at it, there's been some quality stuff.
I do like that, you know, Jake and I do our best to watch as many Oscar-nominated Best Pictures.
Oh yeah, we've had some pretty good Oscar shows and stuff. Like, and we always get lucky on those because for whatever reason, we don't always watch, we usually watch one or two of the same ones, and then I've seen two that you haven't, and you've seen two that I haven't. So between the two of us, we can usually get through an effective show that benefits the audience of 15.
Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm. But that's it for pop culture. And then maybe just to make it official, just let Doug do all the Hodges for this one. You and I can just react.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, I did want to talk about my Blazers, but take it away, Doug.
I don't even have
seven
any.
Hodges.
I didn't even prepare seven. Anything.
Okay, well, you'll probably come up with some. Brandon, you can start with your Blazers.
Okay, I'll try.
Okay, started off with a 113-104 win over Utah, playing tonight against the
Utah Clippers. Was a trendy pick to be really good this year.
Yeah, and you know, Dame getting a lot of love for the Damian Lillard for the 39 points he dropped.
Has he started embracing playing defense, or is he still a one-sided player?
I mean, and that's the big knock on the Blazers. You know, I see them as a 4 or 5 seed yet again. Mm-hmm. And I see maybe one round winning one round.
Yet again.
But with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard as your backcourt, neither one is ever going to be a great defender, I think.
McCollum at least has the body where he maybe could be. Like, Dame Lillard, when I look at him, like, you know who I see a lot of? Steph Curry. Steph Curry, not a good defender either. But, I mean, that's a good thing. Steph Curry's one of the 5 best players in the league. And
Lillard, you know, he's shown the potential to just, I wouldn't say Steph Curry it, but 75% of Steph Curry.
Yeah, still amazing. No, and that's like, it is. When I watch him, that's the comparable or the player that he seems closest to, because he's an awesome dribbler, good passer,
when he's hot,
great shooter.
He really is undefendable because he can shoot from anywhere, and you don't want to guard him 40 feet out.
He's a good, exciting player, and you know,
and
like
Jalen Rose. I mean, talking very recently, saying he's going to be an MVP candidate this year, which I think is a little trendier more than it is substantial. But we'll
see. I think, and I guess I'll make this mine MVP candidates, and we probably next week do like a basketball preview show, but. I would say, like, the MVP candidates to me, like, I think the Warriors guys are going to eliminate each other and stuff. Like, I just think that no one's going to win the MVP off of that team.
Is this LeBron's push then? Is this?
I think he could do it.
I mean, he had quite the first night. And he has the potential. But then again, like, he's kind of getting long in the tooth, as they say.
Which, it's not showing.
Dating myself because we're about the same age.
Yeah. But you're not an elite level basketball player. Like, it's different aging scheme.
We have about the same amount of hair though.
Yep, true.
So we got that.
But with, like, I also could see LeBron wanting to really make a push to make Kyrie Irving the MVP candidate and stuff, because that would allow LeBron to kind of pull like what Tim Duncan always did, you know, because LeBron's never had like a Tim Duncan season. He's pretty much had to go like 80 games every year, nonstop, bringing it pretty much till the end of the season. And I think with the team being as they are, like, they're good enough for him to maybe relax a little bit more and have like a few 20-minute games and stuff. So it just depends if he's still hungry. This would probably be like the last year I think he could win an MVP. And it just matters if he wants to say, I want 5. I want to have more than Jordan, you know, like, because, I mean, he's just competing against Ghost right now. There's nobody in the league that has his resume.
And, I mean, even if he scratches himself for 5 to 10 games this year, Cleveland's making the playoffs in that East.
The guy that I would also consider...
And they're going to make at least the conference finals again.
The guy that I would also consider putting money on in Vegas, depending upon the odds, another guy that doesn't play defense, but MVP voters, obviously, if they gave Steph Curry 2 in a row, don't value defense a ton. James Harden is going to have some massive numbers
this
year.
And he's even a worse defender than Lillard.
He is, yeah. They have, like, whole YouTube collections devoted to his horrible defense. And then he's the type of defender that would really tick me off if I was playing with. Because, like, he won't guard his guy, but then he'll start chewing the guy out for not picking him up. So that's how he does leadership. But, I mean, now that they're doing the Mike D'Antoni system and stuff, the 7 seconds or less per shot, they've made him officially the point guard in title. So, I mean, talk about a shoot-first point guard, but he still gets assists. Like, his numbers are going to be amazing this season. Like,
and another guy, if you're talking about the whole offense is going to run through him, and that's Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah. He could be – I see, like, Kobe 2006 from him. Like,
sure.
Yeah, he'll carry him to 45 wins, and he's gonna put up a lot of like 38-8 games and stuff, because he's a great rebounder for a guard. And now with Kevin Durant not there, like, he doesn't have another great player, you know, that he feels like he has to get involved. Like, he's got guys that are pretty chill. Like, Steven Adams isn't demanding touches. Like, he just likes to, you know, play physical and stuff. Like, Oladipo seems like a really chill guy and stuff. So I think they've got the team around Russ. That's kind of like, kind of like
to
those
get them
old
in the
Sixers
playoffs,
teams.
He has
with,
to have an MVP season.
Yeah, to those old Sixers teams with Iverson, you know, where they never had another guy that really demanded touches when they went to the finals, so Iverson could just be Iverson. And I think Russ has a lot of that in him and stuff. So, yeah, that should be interesting. Doug,
Anthony
you came
Davis
up with some
is
Hodges.
Another one, but yeah. Got some Hodges died now?
Not really.
The Hodge King.
Yeah, he has none.
It's, yeah.
I do want to mention, though, my Blazers home opener win streak goes to 16. That's 2 more than any other team ever in NBA history.
Ah, great random stat. I would have never known that. Doesn't mean a ton, but congratulations.
Hey, I mean, if you're going to Vegas, it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keep putting money on it.
I guess I'll pull a Doug and throw a Hodge out there that I'm sure you guys have all been following to some extent. Now, and it seemed weird to me, it must have been that they were bluffing originally about public funding, but now the Chris Hansen Group is totally self-sufficient. Yeah. Like, that seemed kind of interesting.
And they're not just being completely self-sufficient. They're going to fix the Lander overpass as well, which is not something that they would really have to do.
It's like they're taking on government work.
It's like they're like, you know what? You know, Seattle City Hall, you're not going to approve this. We're going to make it impossible for you to say no.
Yeah. But the thing, and I mean, I'm happy about
that.
The
only thing they need is the vacation again, vacating that one little lot that they're not going to use.
Yeah.
Or that interesting alley or something.
Interesting alley, yeah. Usage of the word vacation, because at first I was like, where's he going with this? But vacating in the
shun. And you know what? I know, you know, from being a hockey guy, the NHL is waiting with bated breath.
Yeah.
They realign their entire system, their entire league. With the idea that there's going to be two teams in the West. Right now they have 16 teams in the East, 14 teams in the West. They just brought Vegas starting next year. So what does that leave? Another team in the West. They're just waiting on a stadium.
The NHL is just waiting to embrace us in a, my best friend, Doug.
Exactly. And, you know,
they want to give us the best friend.
It makes total
hub.
Sense. People are like, well, why wouldn't they go to put a second team in Toronto? Or why wouldn't they go to Quebec City? Or the NHL wants to grow the game. They're not going to make a single new fan in Canada.
And they've got potential because Seattle's a top 10 market.
And Vegas is right up there, too. I mean, like, you're going to grow new fans in Vegas and Seattle. You're not going to grow them in
Canada.
And
that could kind of hold over because if they build the new stadium with the idea, if you build it, they will come towards the NBA, you're going to need to fill out those dates and stuff. So they're going to want an NHL team right away. And I think that puts more onus to
make it happen. I think them wanting to be completely independent, not using any taxpayer money, means that they might have something in the plans for both.
And maybe should have we seen this coming when Chris Hansen bought up all that property in Soto and stuff? Like, he's a smart man with a lot of money. He's not going to let that property just go to waste. And the other thing that I heard that I think would be amazing if it happened was that there's potential to make like an LA Live type situation where there's just like a huge media center and stuff, and then a spot where like fans can
congregate.
And there's
hotels. Have you ever been down there? There's hotels everywhere.
Yeah.
I stayed at a hotel down there one time.
So like that's never really been a part of the Seattle landscape, which I mean can be good and bad. Like it is fun, you know, like tailgating in the rocks, you know, like under a covered area to avoid the rain. But like if they just make this elite, huge, huge area, like Seattle's going to be taking on a whole different look as a city.
And I think
Douglas, your thoughts.
You're going to make so much money off that.
Don't get too excited. Wait and see. I mean, I think things could happen. Yeah, I agree with what you said. You know, they're kind of almost daring them, making it like so good. But who knows? The mayor. I mean, you even know who is the mayor? They're the one that's going to ultimately.
Oh, it's the former senator.
Ed Murray.
Ed Murray. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it'll be. I think there's still more to.
It seemed like McGinn was more pro bringing an NBA team than Murray is.
But the thing is,
he was
pro
bike.
Very pro bike.
I'm about him.
The port, they make fans with the port by fixing that Lander overpass, which is what the port has been asking the city to do for years. So you make, like, you're doing something for the port, who has been your biggest enemy.
Well, some
actually, the Seattle Mariners have been a pretty big enemy.
Which just makes no sense.
Wherever this stadium,
it affects them in no way.
Yeah.
Wherever this stadium's going to be, there was some, and I don't even know where it's going to be, where Hansen has the land, but there was a reporter down there that actually like sat there for like 6 hours during prime day hours, and like two trucks drove by. It's not even like a busy road, I guess. And so
that's
the
only thing they're asking for,
yeah,
really.
I guess I kind of thought of something. Well, first, Robert Barber, he's been, he's off the team for right now because of a stupid thing that happened over the summer.
Was he the Cougar that was on the Seahawks?
No, Robert Barber, he actually plays on the Cougars right now.
Oh.
Come on, Jake.
Anyway, so he's off because of a fight or something. And then, okay, so I'm sure you guys have heard something, but if anything, you can react. Just the stuff that's been going on with, like, Archbishop Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, so that Archbishop Murphy's a high school, a private high school.
With a lot of money.
In Everett. And they've had their, right now they're, what, 8-0? 8-0 overall, 5-0 in league.
But
how many of those were forfeits?
Well, I'm gonna get there, Jake. It's my
pod. Thanks for bearing the lead.
Holy cow!
Yeah, he had me going here, and
I'm done.
Like, oh, here's the ending.
Well, I mean,
Bruce Willis is dead at the end of Sixth Sense.
So they played their first three games, the first game being against Issaquah, which is the 4A school. Archbishop Murphy's a 2A school. They beat Issaquah 73-0. Their second game to Bishop Blanchett won 59-0. The third game against Kings, 38-0. After that, they won their next four games, as Jake's already alluded to, by forfeit.
You're welcome.
Teams forfeiting South Whidbey, Sultan, Granite Falls, Cedar Park Christian. All four of those schools have forfeited. And then on the 22nd of October, Olympic actually was like, we're going to play. You know, we're going to play you guys. And they lost 48-0. And then the next game on the 28th, it doesn't look, I don't know if a forfeit's already been said that's going to happen, but it's at Cedar Crest, wherever that is. But so the reasonings of these and who has forfeited are all different. So there's been at one school, it was like the parents saying, no, no, no. And then at another school, the AD was the one that said, we're going to forfeit for you guys. And then another one was even player votes. So, that's just what I remember hearing.
So it's not because they're cheating?
Oh, no, not at all.
Not at all. Oh, well, wow. And part of it, like, too, is what they're claiming is safety. So, mind you, at least in the first three games I can only speak to, I don't know what happened in the Olympic game, no one was hurt in any of those games. They're claiming they have a guy on the offensive line or defense, like, that's like a 300-pounder, you know, that's a little bit bigger, you know. I mean,
wow.
It just seems stupid, and this is not the time, mid-season, to try to, like, sit on your high horse or whatever it is to try to make policy changes and things like that. Mind you, too, they did try to get into a different division, the Westco, with more competitive people. You know, Westco has, I think, like, O'Day and, you know, Eastside Catholic, you know, other private schools, you know, and things like that. I just think it's wrong. I mean, and there's so many people losing here. Not just the teams that are getting their butts kicked, but I give them credit for playing. I mean, not only the players that want to play on Archbishop Murphy, but what about like the players on the other team and that they're not able to play, especially when the AD's making the decision for them? Or what about just the band or the cheerleaders or the alumni or the teachers? You know, like, you guys, we all went to high school. It's a big deal. Friday nights, let's go to school. Let's go to the football game and then go get drunk after. I didn't drink in high school. But, you know, but you know, Mike, you see my point. Like, so many people are losing here. It's just, it's not just the football team, Archbishop Murphy, those football players. It's the teachers and the students at that school, as well as the other schools.
You know,
I just don't understand it.
Is it a millennial
vote,
thing?
That seems ridiculous. It's a millennial
Maybe.
Thing.
Yeah, because where, like, you know, millennials can't deal with adversity.
You know, if I played high school football, I would want to play these guys because to say I was the one that scored a touchdown against them.
Oh, yeah. Especially at this point, right?
Yeah, exactly. I scored on them.
And then at what point, what are you teaching them? Okay, we're going to forfeit this week, and then we're right back to playing the next week. How do you as a coach get up in front of those players? I didn't play football at all. I know you played in junior high. But, I mean, how do you get up in front of them and say, give it your all, and don't quit, and fight till the end, and blah, 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 that the coaches say, coach speak. How do you do that when just the week before you forfeited for us, or all this, that, the other? How do you do that? You know, like, don't you lose all credibility as a coach? You know, like, I mean, life lessons come from sports, right? Like, we
just
have
give up when it gets hard, guys.
Individual sports, team sports. There's so many things that you learn from sports, and yet they're forfeiting. I just don't get it.
And they're like, already encouraging millennials to do this enough as it is. We don't need this to go into sports, too.
I don't know.
What are pro sports going to be like in 20 years?
Well, I don't think football's going to be around.
Yeah, we've kind of already discussed that in the past. Football's going to be like a regional, like, dogfighting or something.
Even as a parent now, like, no, I would encourage my kid to go up against a challenge like this.
Well, even, like, the parents, like, before the season started, you saw the schedule, right? You knew who they were. They're not that different, I'm going to guess, I don't know for a fact, from last season? Why, at what point, I mean, you don't, like, I why talked about this
them,
with, yeah, why schedule them? I talked about this with Vanessa, I was like, you know, you don't pull them midway through the season because of potential of what's going to happen. You finish what you started. You signed up knowing who was going to play that. You know, the only team, and I don't know which team it was, but I remember hearing, the only team I can agree with, maybe, was the forfeit. It was this a team that only had like 14 players to begin with. I think it was South Whitby.
Yeah, because teams have forfeited for that in the past.
More than anything, the league should just step in and move them to a different, like, they got to go.
They should. Well, the state, the WINA or
WIAA.
Yeah. They should be doing that. But I guess the Archbishop did try to move, but West
then
Coast
then play
said
the schedule that you're handed,
and that's all you can do. Mm-hmm. But and I
think
will
about
say,
our buddy, like Big Joe, always bragged about sacking Billy Joe Hobert and stuff. That was like his claim to fame.
At that time when he was there, it was 3A, but yeah.
And we're not so old.
I mean, this could be your Uncle Rico moment. You know what I mean? This could be like, you know, the guys on the other team that I scored against.
Yeah, I just think it's ridiculous.
Richard Sherman played for that high school. Yeah. The years don't line up.
And really, you know, I almost feel like to some degree, I would, and I'm just trying to make an argument the other way, Archbishop Murphy should be more worried about their safety than the other people, because they're probably coached, well, actually the coach of Archbishop Murphy's an ex UW player who played with Brock Heward. But they're probably like hack players. And now I'm making leaps that are un...
That's an interesting one.
But hack players who are just going to go at the knees and like hurt another kid, you know, or something like that. But I don't know. I just
don't forfeit. I mean, come on.
I think quitting is wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be totally, like, I did not see this coming at all. I thought you were going to say, like, they did some recruiting cheating and...
No, they may have, but that will come out
about... I mean, like,
there
hasn't been accusations.
Yeah, not like Bellevue.
I remember one play in a football game, like, there was... guy on the other team was like heading for a long touchdown, and I ran after him the whole time. He was faster than me, you know, but like, who knows, he might trip up or something. Like, I could potentially catch up, like, if something happens. And I remember, like, we got killed and I was pretty bummed, and we were in the car and stuff, and my dad was like, hey, my favorite play was when you ran after the guy because no one else on your team was and stuff. Like, that just showed determination, you know, you guys were losing and stuff, but you didn't quit and stuff. And that's just like,
and that's what they should be teaching these kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
never quit.
So, there's my Hodge.
Yeah, that was a good one. So, we switched over to Mount Rushmore, and this was Doug's idea, so I'll let you explain it.
Well, and I mean, you guys had one already, and I wasn't, you know, I just came up, I wasn't sure if you'd done it yet, but just, you know, best or favorite teams of Seattle, you know, so...
Or I guess we could say local, in general.
Local, yeah, you know, so, you know, you... Thinking of like the Seahawks or the Sonics, the Mariners,
the Bellevue Belches.
Well, the first few episodes I had farts.
Yeah, I know. of this yeah, whole I thing. Appreciate you being more refined.
But you know, those kinds of things. So best or favorite teams, because necessarily it doesn't have to be a best team. Maybe it was just a favorite team that was just like, you know, they always came back and they just were something to you. And so,
and just to clarify, like, specific years. So it's not just saying, like, we love the Seahawks. It's the 2013 Seahawks. It's the 1988 Seahawks. You know, like, vintages of these specific
and
teams.
And I got to say, because, you know, it's probably not making your list anyways, but are we going just professional?
No.
Are we including the 91 Huskies?
They're not going to make the list.
They won't make the list.
You can,
but
you can talk about them. You have a voice here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to talk about him?
Oh, yeah.
Go
you know,
for it. Sell
it's probably some of my first memories of watching football is the 91 Huskies. And my two of my brothers and a couple of my cousins going to the 91 Rose Bowl against Michigan. Mario Bailey doing the Heisman pose against Desmond Howard. He won the Heisman that year. Etman just being a beast.
Steroids help, kids.
You know, I'm my favorite Husky of all time, Mark Brunell, kind of getting his moments
here
and there.
I liked him.
Just a very, very, very memorable season for me. You know, it's like you remember that those
oh, no.
those first those first seasons, right, that of watching sports and getting into it, and that was kind of my first one with, mm-hmm. with the Huskies.
You were still in Pampers.
Six to seven.
Still in Pampers.
No, not Pampers. I think I was potty trained by that.
Maybe the transition underwear.
Well, yeah, I think low-hanging fruit, you know, would have to be obviously the Seahawks that you mentioned. The
2013.
Super Bowl winning Seahawks.
Yeah, I think that just goes without saying. No team has given me more joy in my life than that particular team. Just
one of the, I mean, I think it's got to be in the talks at least as big a, best NFL moments ever, the Richard Sherman tip to,
yeah.
to Malcolm Smith.
And that was part of that wonderful 2013 that team.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be remembered. That's going
to the Percy Harvin kick return, like just knowing at that moment, like, okay, this is real. You don't need to pinch me and stuff. Like, because the whole time you're kind of thinking, like, throughout my whole life, we've always found ways to blow these and stuff. All the teams that I like. That was kind of the first time where I really allowed myself to just celebrate for the second half.
So obviously that one's on, right?
Yeah.
What about for Sonics? I mean, we weren't even around, but...
I don't think we can count that one because we don't have, like, an appreciation for it.
Okay.
And stuff. Like, I think we have to have, like, emotional ties to the team.
So then are you going
to
put the 95-96 ones?
I was thinking about that. But in reality, just for me personally, even though they didn't go to the finals, the team that I liked more was the 93 team when Jordan retired. And we had the most wins in the NBA, and you just know that Jordan's not there, and we had smoked every team in the league. Like, we were undefeated against the Rockets, who did win the championship, and they never even played us close. And the only team that we struggled with in the regular season was the stupid 8-seed Denver Nuggets. But from a pure delight in the regular season, like, I mean, I'm like 13 years old. Like, I've got my Gary Payton shirt with the glove on it. You know, like, that was just a fun team. Like, Sean Kemp hadn't started drinking and partying yet, or if he did, still he could manage it.
He still had about four kids, though, at that point.
Yeah, only four. So, you know, still virile.
But, I mean, he hadn't fallen in love with his jump shot so much that he wasn't going to do anything else.
That was strictly like
that's what my Blazers got,
awesome
thank you.
Dunks, like the Lister blister and stuff.
We also
like,
got the bad Bob Whitsitt, not the good executive of the year.
Yeah, Bob Whitsitt making great decisions, like Kendall Gill, like before the full meltdown. And stuff. Detlef Schrempf just got into town and hit every jumper.
And
mid-range.
I mean, this team had almost got there the year before. They lost in seventh in the conference finals.
Yeah.
To Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. When a very, very odd game where Phoenix shot about 50 free throws and we shot 10 and we still made it to overtime.
You were one step away.
Yeah, no, like going into that season, you know, Jordan's rode off to the sunset. That was ours. And throughout that season, like, I can honestly say I don't think I've ever been happier with Sonics basketball. 96 being a close second because they did make the finals and they were amazing in the playoffs. And they actually gave a Michael Jordan returning Bulls team a pretty good run in six games.
63-19 record. That's
mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good. I would say if I had to pick a
Sonics
one.
The 96 team was one win better, but.
Mm-hmm.
Can I throw out another one? Mm-hmm. I'm staying with basketball. How about the Storm? They won championship in 2004 and 2010.
That was
so
fun.
I did not
watch
a single game. So,
so amazing. I didn't even watch the championship.
I've never
watched it. They won a title, so good for them.
They brought us a title. It was our only title in this in this city. You know,
they
since...
did take some of the stink off of, like, everything that was happening in 2008 when all teams were, like, at rock bottom and stuff, but... credit to the Storm for that. I probably should have
watched. They lost in the conference semis that year.
In hindsight. I would have to throw in, like, the Miracle 95 Mariners, the team that saved baseball in Seattle. Ken Griffey Jr. was injured, but he came back and had that amazing, you know, like, scoring from first on Edgar's double with Dave Niehaus's great call, who was the best, like, play-by-play caller I've ever heard in my life.
That helps build Safeco, right?
It does. It builds Safeco. Yeah. Like, that team really saved baseball. Randy Johnson, the most exciting pitcher I've seen on the same team. A-Rod, when I still liked him.
Well, like, Randy Johnson won the Cy Young that year, too.
Mm-hmm. And then he invented, like, the starter coming out to close games. I don't recall anyone doing that before he did, and now everyone makes a big deal out of it. But Randy was the first. Then, like, Edgar Martinez was amazing, like, one of the best right-handed hitters of all time. Like, that was just a great, great team that
it says
cherish.
Something that I can remember pretty much every position player on that team.
Yeah.
What, 20, 21 years
is
later?
Is that the year
They won, what, 112, 116?
No, games? That was 2001.
Okay.
But this team
they shortened the year of 79 and 66 for the 90s.
This team was just more fun. The only thing that held this team back was we didn't have good closers. Like, if we had like, not players in the clutch, but literally the closer that closes the game as a pitcher, the ninth inning guy, like Norm Charlton just scratching his cup. And then Bobby Ayala being Lou Piniella's nephew or something, whatever, kept him in games.
And, I mean, looking back on it now, the Mariners won the first game of that ALCS against the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of – and then, you know, we're up 2-1, and then just fell off the rails there.
Yeah, but it was still like – I mean, in a way, you had already kind of won the battle because it was scary because the team was going to leave, and then their play on the field, like – the whole city just embraced it so much. Doug, you did mention the 2001 team, and that was a lot of fun in the regular season, but I still remember being nervous going into the playoffs because we didn't have that A1 number one pitcher
and
that you could just trot out
to win
games. And
the stink on this year was Lou Piniella going to the executives and saying, hey, we need one more bat.
Yeah.
One more pitcher.
And they didn't get
it for him. The trade deadline. And they're like, wait, 116 wins, guys.
And then, like, as great as Ichiro was, like, Griffey winning an MVP was a lot more exciting for me than Ichiro winning an MVP. Because Griffey just did it in a way that was so special. Well, even if just in general, like, Griffey as a player, he was on the 95 team in a key role. And Ichiro was cool to watch, but it was more just like an appreciation of a really, really amazing baseball player. Where Griffey, it was like, I haven't seen anything like it before or since.
So yeah, who's our second team on the Mount Rushmore?
95.
I'd say the Mariners probably. And then your
excitement of that play, that's going to be one of the most memorable plays in Seattle sports history.
Yeah, I think they're a shoe-in for
Griffey,
for
the big smile on his face underneath the whole pile.
Yep. And then, like, I think it'd be fair to put a Sonics team in. Like, I don't know if you guys were more – well, you were always a Blazers fan, but I don't know if you were more invested in the team that made the finals or the team that had the heartbreaking playoff loss but would have had a better chance of winning the finals had they got there.
Yep.
A lot of nodding.
Yep, I agree.
With both.
Yes, they were both great teams.
They were, and they, I mean, obviously had a lot of the same players.
Yeah.
Same coach. George Karl, big shout out. He was a fun coach.
Well, they had the memorable moment of the you know, the 93 one, memorable moment of Dikembe Mutombo on the court.
Oh, jeez.
I have to bring out.
That's like in my head, just like the Super Bowl
is.
Like,
it's right there. I have to bring out another one. This one more positive. I think that it doesn't happen often, but the signature of a truly great Cougars team is have an amazing regular season and beat the Huskies. And the only one that I can remember really doing that was the Ryan Leaf team in '97. That was a Cougar team that I loved watching.
Went on to the Rose Bowl.
Which I was at the game, like going to a Rose Bowl. That's like a once in a lifetime.
What's your
experience. Definition
of local?
Local within the state.
God, come on.
It's local.
There's a river between
Portland
us.
Portland is closer.
Oh, but it's a different.
We
it's
can,
a different
we can
state.
Loop in some Blazers state. Teams here. Let's do
it's
it.
A different state.
Yeah. Why doesn't Paul Allen, the owner of the Blazers, move him up here?
Because he has a sweetheart deal down there. You realize. Okay, this is going to be on a tangent.
Would you not want him up here? We need a team here, though.
Yeah, but look what he has down there. He owns the entire Rose Quarter. He owns, you know, so then he owns all the concessions that happen within there. When you go to a Blazers game, you pay Paul Allen four times. You pay him to park.
Good business,
you pay him
man.
For concessions. Mm-hmm. He has a majority ownership in Ticketmaster. So you pay the Ticketmaster charge on your ticket. Then, of course, you pay for your ticket to the Blazers. So four times. Why would he want to risk that?
It's got like a mafia syndicate
again,
over there.
Again, like people talk about hockey, NHL going because it's, you know, the Motor Center is
who,
there.
Wait. How you started that, when talk about hockey. No, who talks about hockey?
But
who
I'm saying,
talks about
people
that?
Talk about the NHL team going there instead of Seattle because an arena is ready. But why would Paul Allen do that?
Do you got one that you really want to push for other than the 91 Huskies?
You know, I was looking at this across the board. It didn't end well, but the 2005 Seahawks. That's right.
Oh, yeah. That was a really good team that delivered a lot of fun
our
moments.
Our first MVP and Sean Alexander.
Yeah, 28 touchdowns that year, 1,800
record yards.
Yeah, let's put them there.
13-3 record. First playoff win in 20-something years, 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we have three now.
That's well, four. Depending on how you feel about one of the Sonics teams.
you got two 2013. We got the Super Bowl team.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The 13 Super Bowl, one of the Mariners, one of
the 95
and 2014 might get on there.
And then the Sonics.
If not for the
or I, you know what? I think I like that Seahawks Super Bowl team more than I like the Sonics teams. That's tough to say.
Yeah.
That is tough to say. Like that's splitting hairs.
Let me think.
Kind of was good that, you know.
I was younger with the Sonics, it so was you're good more that, like.
I remember Skip Bayless picking out against us like every single playoff game.
I think I got. But what about that 08 team?
You're right.
That 08 team. That was a good year. Like, remember the.
That was amazing.
UW, the Huskies.
Yeah.
That was an awesome team.
That was.
That was a great.
Yeah, you guys were so special that year.
You're not getting on there.
You sure? You sure?
God.
I mean, for teams that brought me pure joy.
A lot of joy.
Like, adult joy.
All I know is I was at college. No, was I at college?
You were still in Pampers.
Yeah. The 2008?
Yeah.
Wow. Give me a lot of credit. Yeah, that's not getting on there, guys.
Oh, you sure?
Veto.
We got probably 2 out of 3. I mean, think about how special they were. 0-12.
No,
that'll never happen again.
Big conference team has ever done that.
What you should know about Tyrone Willingham is
he's a good man and a great coach.
Yes,
he's a good man, and he gave a lot of people scholarships that probably wouldn't have gotten scholarships. So that
he lost 3 out of 4 to the Cougars. That was amazing.
That's great.
That's brought me a lot of joy. Like, yeah, I think they're in.
Come to think of it, I don't think that year actually existed.
Oh no, I remember it. I actually went to a game that team played in.
Wow.
And they lost.
Yeah, well, of course they did. How could they win?
Yeah, you went to the Apple Cup last year too, and that turned
out.
No,
but we're talking about the greatest joy that you could derive from a team. And like, I mean, they're not like 2013 Super Bowl joy, but like they're there. Oh, that's a no-brainer. That's a shoo-in.
I think that's our fourth, right? Go ahead and start the music.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Cue us up. We got a list.
Jake, will you recap our
top? I'd be honored.
Our Heisman?
Okay, so obviously our Mount Rushmore, our low-hanging fruit was very obviously that we could all agree on was the 2013 Seahawks winning the Super Bowl, lifting the monkey off collectively a whole city's back, the parade, the podcast, everything. They're number one. Close second would be the 08 Huskies. I mean, we all love that they went 0-12. You cherished it.
Definitely.
Go Cougs!
Probably more than us two. Like, I mean, we're a little reserved.
I'm going to take this just because you guys are upset about how the Husky season is.
You're a little reserved. Like, Doug and I were like, I don't know. Should we put them in? And Brandon just
obviously, the
it.
People, the listeners can't see, but Brandon's face turned red when this came up. His face and ears have turned red.
And then we'll say the 05 Seahawks that almost did it first, if not for the refs. And then, of course, the miracle 1995 Mariners. And that is our list. But I have to give a final quick shout out to some of our best guests that have been on over the 100 episodes. Crockett. Well, I'm going to say Aaron Crockett first and foremost because he's done the most of any of the guests. He does a great job.
How many has he done?
He's done a lot.
Okay.
Four, I think. Four or five.
My father, very, very fun, enlightening podcasts when he's on there. Only tough part is we always lose the Apple Cup right after that pod.
So you might need to change it up this year.
Philip Hall, South End Studio. Shout out. Always brings good stuff to the show. My cousin Andy was on the first episode, taught me how to do this. Big shouts to him. Kyle Ball with the racing and stuff.
And
that was
unplugging the.
Yep, yeah, yep. He was a fun, good guest. Your brother-in-law.
And my buddy Joe was on.
Yeah, that's right. Joe was on too. Your buddy that lives close to us.
Oh yeah, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, just shout out Bert Flynn coming in for
the
movie star action belt episode with all of his knowledge of old 70s Charles Bronson and Clint Eastwood films. We've had some really, really good guests, and of course, three great hosts, Jake,
Brandon,
and Doug.
Yep, so thank you all for 100 episodes. It's been a lot of fun. 206 Sports Jocks, we are out.